This episode is brought to you by Squarespace.com, the fast and easy way to publish a high-quality website or blog. For a free trial and 10% off your new account, go to squarespace.com/twim.
This week on the show, breaking rocks with a Bic lighter, all content must be created equally, and dude, don't be a seagull when you go beyond viral. Right here on This Week in Media, number 201. Hey there, boys and girls. We are back with another edition of This Week in Media. I'm your host this week, Daisy Whitney, of the New Media Minute and soon-to-be Mockingbird's fame. Buy my book on Amazon. Anyway, sorry for that not-so-subtle pitch. I have another book I'm going to pimp today, though. It's not mine. It's somebody else's. But let me introduce you to some of my other esteemed colleagues. My co-host today is Tim Street. Where are you, Tim? Oh, that's right. You're in San Francisco. You're not in L.A. today. What are you doing in San Francisco?
I'm in San Francisco for the App Nation conference. So it's all about, you know, iPad and Android apps and that kind of thing. And so I was like, hey, Daisy, hey, Alex, let's get together at Pixel Core. But I'm the only one that showed up here. So
isn't that great? It's perfect. Alex has been traveling. He was in London, so he's getting caught up this week. And yeah, I'm doing this show from a random bedroom in my house. So there you go. That's what's going on. We also have Lon Simon of Local Online News TV in Connecticut, who's a regular now. He is with us. How are you, Lon? Thank you for hosting last week. You did a great job.
My pleasure. Thank you. It's a lot of work, so I appreciate all that you put into this.
We have such a talented crew of regulars. It's really helpful just to be able to kind of rotate back and forth from time to time, when we need to. I had a horrible cough last week, so nobody wanted to be listening to me. I didn't fully introduce Tim properly. Many of you know him, of course, as a digital showrunner. He also is with MDialogue these days, so I just wanted to make sure I got the official intros for Tim in there. And also, we are bringing back, by popular demand, Kevin Nolte! Yay! Here's Kevin. How are you, Kevin?
I'm sick. I'm good, but here's the thing. I'm sitting here on Amazon trying to give your book a positive review, and it won't let me.
Well, you can't yet because it doesn't. You usually can't review books until they're officially released, and it doesn't. The Mockingbird doesn't officially release until November 2nd. I think there are a couple early reviews up there because Amazon has this program called Amazon Vine, where sometimes it distributes early copies of products, you know, any type of products, electronics, books, whatever it is, to regular prolific Amazon reviewers. So sometimes you'll find a couple early reviews, but yeah, you can't do the official one, and you haven't even read it yet. So, but let's talk about.
But that's not going to stop me from raving about it.
Good. Well, thank you. So, speaking of raving, Kevin Nolte is a viral video star. You guys probably know him as Nolte and captain of the Brussels Sprouts video, which I haven't seen but need to see evidently because it's quite amusing. And Fred of the High Pitched Voice loves that video too. But Kevin is also a consultant on branding and online video and social media. And he has a book coming out in, it's a week or two. It's called Beyond Viral. Am I correct with the dates? Is it September 21st or September? Oh gosh, today is September 15th.
It was supposed to be the 21st, but it's already I pre-ordered it just to see how quick it would come, and it came the other day. So I guess they're releasing them early. But yeah, it's can you believe it? I actually had the fortitude to finish a book.
Well, that they're releasing it early because there's so much demand for it. Now we are going to spend some time talking about the concepts in your book because I think it's very useful for our listeners. But we have an ad, and that is a very important thing. I'm excited about it to let you know that This Week in Media is brought to you this week by Squarespace.com. Squarespace is the fast and easy way to publish a high quality website or blog. Squarespace has a lot of cool features and recently announced new social widgets. Squarespace also has a native Twitter widget. It allows you to add multiple Twitter accounts. You can filter by keyword. You can customize the look and feel of your design. It also has a native Flickr widget that allows for multiple accounts and various layouts, and a native RSS widget that lets you pull in feeds from almost any website on the web. Many, many other features. Very easy to use. Alex has talked about it before. He's using it. We're overhauling all of our show-related sites for Pixel Core using Squarespace. And if you want some other sites to check out, Clayton Morris, who from time to time is a guest on This Week in Media, uses Squarespace. He's at ClaytonMorris.com, so you can check that out. So there you go. For a free trial, of course, go to Squarespace.com/TWIM. No credit card needed. Just try it out to build your website. Then if you decide to purchase it, you get 10% off for life when you enter the offer code TWIM, T-W-I-M. That's Squarespace.com/TWIM.
Hey, so, Daisy, if I may throw in a gratuitous plug, I've got like 12-year-old kid in the UK that's making my Beyond Viral website as we speak. And I was like, hey, you know, why don't you use Squarespace? And he's like, oh, that's the definitive tool for blogs. So that's what you should use for your Beyond Video, Beyond Viral blog. So maybe I'll be a debut customer and get the TWIM discount.
I like hearing that. So let's talk about, I want to talk about your book a little bit. I want to talk about the ideas in it, the tips, the strategies. What is sort of the overarching goal with Beyond Viral? What are you hoping that readers, businesses, small businesses, marketers, whoever it's geared towards will be able to accomplish with your knowledge and insight?
Yeah, so I mean, what I was sensing is there are a lot of books about online video and YouTube and how to use YouTube and how to do video production. But here we are with online video marketing and advertising growing at this exponential, 40-60% growth rate, which is counter, most other marketing mix elements. And as a result, there's a lot of really erroneous spending, and big brands, leading brands are chasing the exception. Let's go viral. Let's create something viral. And then meanwhile, you've got, as we all know, very prominent web stars with large, aggregated audiences that are eager to sponsor. It's a real deal for advertisers. The market hasn't sort of wakened up to this. So, the whole goal of the book is to sort of help advertisers, ones that I've worked with from GE to Mentos and MTV and Fox, get their message through people that have already aggregated an audience. And guess what? I have an acronym that spells DAISY, so we can give the audience a free five tips.
All right, let's do it.
It's sort of a forced acronym because I made it up just about 5 minutes ago. But
I'm nervous. I am nervous, Kevin.
I know. But you know, I'm better at when I wing it as opposed to when I take the DAISY or Steve Garfield planning method. So step one is do what you love. Get on there and do something you're really passionate about, whether you're trying to promote a brand or yourself, and get your content up there, even if it's just for the search engine optimization. So that's the D in DAISY. The A is audience, become the audience. Don't just distribute, become a viewer, watch other people's stuff, find people that share your interest. The I in DAISY is interact. It's not just a one-way medium. You really have to engage with your community, make friends with people who share your interest, and get out to other people that are also talking to your friends or your audience or your target. The S is sing. And by that I mean entertain and inform before pitching a product. There's nothing more annoying than somebody just leading with a promotional message. First earn the right, by creating something that's really informative, educational, or entertaining. And then I really have to force the why, because there aren't a lot of words that begin with why, but yeah, baby, is for the why, which is this is where everybody fails. It's, you just have to keep rolling. Don't give up. Keep rolling. If you look at the common denominator on most of the people that have sustained an audience on YouTube, it's people that just persisted. Even when people were down on them or they had a funk, they just got back on the horse and kept
riding. Well, that's kind of what you do too, frankly. I mean, I think one of the things that has always impressed me about your work, Kevin, is that, even though you've got four kids, you've got a wife, you're balancing, day job, consulting, speaking at conferences, being an adult, essentially, you also make sure that you're taking that time to get on the golf cart with your dog to goof off and do silly pratfalls outside, the local Wawa or whatever it is, that you're still, that you have this audience that you've built laptop. This is something that you enjoy, but you keep doing it. Now, that being said, who do you see as the readership for your book? Who is going to benefit from the ideas? Is it somebody who wants to be a web star? Is it the next iJustine? Or is it for the realtor down the road who wants to get more involved with social media and online video?
Yes, I always feel weird about charging fellow creators because I've made my blog, Will Video for Food, you know, as a vehicle to help creators. I don't mind charging brands and marketers and corporations. So I have a free ebook called How to Get Popular on YouTube Without Any Talent. So, I mean, that's out there for creators. The primary audience for the book really is anybody from an entrepreneur to a marketer to an agency that are trying to sort of, you know, think a little bit more creatively than just rolling the dice on a viral video. I mean, that's jump the shark. It's, you know, it still happens occasionally, but there's so many more clever ways to engage via this exciting. It's to me, it's the most visceral of all social media because you can communicate, you know, with your face and your energy and your tone, and it's such a cool medium to engage. Whether you're trying to, you know, sell yourself a product, your services, or just entertain, it's a perfect medium for that. So that, you know, that's really the target.
Now, let's broaden this a little bit to bring in Tim and Lon, of course. Tim, I you've got an interesting perspective, well, frankly, on everything. But I want to hear just kind of your thoughts on just the overall idea of Beyond Viral. You're somebody who has had a lot of experience, you know, producing videos that have gotten millions of views. You also are advising businesses and brands on what makes sense from a video perspective. You know, what do you think about Kevin's acronym, and how do you see that applying to independent producers? Sorry about my barking dog. I'll mute myself in a minute. How do you see that applying to independent producers, brands, etc.?
Well, I think Kevin has a really great insight on the YouTube space in terms of how it works from an individual standpoint, but also how it works from a brand understanding. And a lot of people just don't realize that there is a culture there inside YouTube, and that community has some unwritten rules. And that acronym really spells it out. I mean, you need to become part of the community and understand the community and understand what works and what doesn't work. So they're just like when you go to a cocktail party, there are things that are acceptable at a cocktail party, and there are things that are not. You can't just walk into a cocktail party and take off your shirt. It's, you know, unless it's that kind of cocktail party.
Did you do that recently, Kevin?
Yeah. Dang, oh. But no, you're onto a good point. It's like some brands come in like the Amway rep, you know, and they just start pitching before they meet people, and it's just obnoxious.
You can't walk up to a cocktail party circle of friends who are having a conversation and start handing out your business card. It just totally undermines who you are and what you're trying to do. And that same rule applies on YouTube. You have to spend some time there and watch the videos and understand the culture, understand the comments. You can't do a seagull.
Seagull, like a drive-by, basically.
A seagull comes in, poops, and leaves. And that's what a lot of people try to do on YouTube. They just poop and leave.
Well,
and
because there's, you know, it's a similar idea as social media, Tim. I think a lot of people forget that a conversation really should start by listening. And there's not enough of that occurring, whether it's watching on YouTube, whether it's if you're a brand and you're trying to get into social media, you will see brands just push right away and start talking. No, what you do first, if you're a restaurant chain and you've never been involved with social media before, you don't want to jump on Twitter and just start talking right away. You need to spend time, whether it's a couple weeks or months or days or whatever it is, and actually listen to what people are saying. And I think that, you know, a lot of these initial steps are often skipped by businesses and brands who just feel a kind of, you know, eagerness to get involved, and it's important not to skip them. Lon, what are your thoughts on this area and kind of, you know, do's and don'ts, if you will, in terms of, you know, participating in video?
Well, as someone from Connecticut who gets pooped on often by birds, I think the
seagull edition of Twim.
Mine,
exactly.
Mine.
it's important to be able to dodge poop and not poop yourself. That's a critical thing. And from what we're doing, because we're looking at getting a large but small audience, and that's a very kind of a mixed message I'm sending there, I guess. But we'll never in local news get a million views on a video unless it's something that is spectacularly interesting to the rest of the world. And at which case, it may not be of much value to our advertisers to have 2 million views, because most of them won't come down to the carpet shop in West Hartford Center to go buy a rug, because it's so far away for those folks. So, you know, we're looking at a lot of the successful things that Kevin especially has done and others have done on YouTube, and trying to find out how to localize that success, build those local celebrities, the people that are telling our news stories, and building a smaller model that will become profitable in the aggregate, in that when we're doing a lot of these low income or low budget and hopefully high income videos, that we can bring some success in that regard. So I'm really eager actually to check out the book, and I'm actually talking to a bunch of business owners tomorrow about this. So this is good timing.
You know, I want to move on to some news stories, but before I do, Kevin, I want to help you promote your book. I want to help you sell your book, and I want to offer something to our TWIM listeners who I love, because they tune in every week and they write to me and they tweet about this. So I'm going to give away 3 copies of Kevin's book, and what you need to do, we're just going to make this a really simple kind of Twitter contest, if you will. You need to tweet me, you need to have my name at Daisy Whitney sometime this week, and I want you to put the hashtag #BeyondViral in it so that Kevin can check them out as well. And I just want you to tell me how you want to use the book, you know, how you want to use it for your business, your brand, your show, whatever it is, to go viral. You can be funny, you can be serious. The only thing is, if it's offensive, I'm not going to read it or consider it. So be nice, be funny.
Can they use the word poop, though?
I mean, would poop, yes, poop is okay. You can use
it. So I gotta match it. I mean, you're actually giving away 3. I'm going to go for 4 just to make it the lucky 7. Let's go 7. That's what? Such a magical number.
Do we have 7 listeners? I hope so. every listener gets this.
Well, good news. Your odds are about 95% that you'll get a free book.
So we'll keep this going through next Monday, which is September 21st, and then after that, I'm going to take a look at the entries, and I'm going to make arbitrary decisions. I do a lot of book giveaways. I like to support my author friends, so I'm just going to decide then who the winners are. So yeah, Beyond Viral is the hashtag. We'll be giving away 7 copies. So there you go. Let's shift to a little bit of news now. Interesting story in Information Week. This is kind of a small story, but I want to use this as a jumping off point to talk about Amazon and music and Amazon and digital entertainment. Amazon is buying this music service. I think it's Amy Street or Ami Street. I could be pronouncing it wrong, but that won't be the first time I've pronounced something wrong. It's AMIE. It's an online music service that apparently is popular with aspiring artists trying to promote their works. Amazon announced the purchase last week in an email to users, and Ami Street said that its services would no longer be available as of September 22nd, and I guess it's going to be merging in then with Amazon. Now, what the story in Information Week points out, of course, is that Amazon has made some other, quote, quirky acquisitions. It bought, you know, Woot, which offers, you know, 1 item a day at a discount. It was a great video. Speaking of videos, when Amazon bought Woot, that was just, they just did a really hilarious send-up video of that. But I guess what I wanted to do with this is sort of is look at, you know, Tim, what is the role that Amazon is playing in the music business? You know, a couple weeks ago, we had the big Apple announcements, all these new iPods, iTunes 10, Ping. I mean, this is obviously, you know, iTunes is just hugely, hugely dominant. What opportunities are there for Amazon in the music business?
Well, I think when you look at any business, you want to build a group of customers. I mean, whether you're doing a podcast and you want a bunch of listeners, you can either build them slowly or you can go buy them. And I don't know how many users there are on this, but these are people who are passionate about music, who are really into music and want to promote their own music and listen to other music. So if you're bringing in that community and you're buying all those email addresses, and hopefully you're getting people that you can continue to engage, there's some money to be made in marketing to those people.
All right. Lon, what do you think? How do you view the role Amazon is playing in just in digital entertainment in general?
I see Amazon actually going into a direction that Steve Jobs clearly has indicated he doesn't have an interest in. Remember when he said it's not Jobs in his iPod rollout said he's not about amateur hour.
Yes, he was very clear about that.
For people like us who are independent producers, I don't consider the people that I'm working with amateurs on localonlinenews.tv, but we're certainly not funded by major corporations here. When we had Brian Brushwood on the show a few weeks ago, he talked about how he was able to self-publish his book onto Kindle through Amazon. Here's another example of Ami Street, where this was independent music that was getting loaded up on there, and it had a curation mechanism to it, and still does, I would assume, because it's still there, that allows people to vote up the stuff that they like and make it more popular. And by voting up, they would buy it, and the price would increase as people bought into it. So this is maybe an example of where Amazon's trying to head to, maybe to cut off publishers to some degree, giving talented people a direction that they can go and publish their content. They can do it already on Kindle. And we know Kindle is not just Kindle, the hardware, it's Kindle, the software. So Mac, PC, iPad, iPod, all those services are out there. This might be kind of exciting. And Amazon has the tools to really help people find things that they might like better than just about anybody, save maybe Netflix. So this is kind of an interesting move for them. And I hope it might help lead to better curation for independent content, because that'll certainly help people like us.
Kevin, do you see that? Do you see that Amazon is moving more broadly into a kind of like a Lulu model, which is, you know, sort of the online publishing for books? And maybe not quite. I mean, obviously, it's a huge book retailer, just a huge retailer in general. But do you see this as part of a broader strategy to open up more avenues for sort of a higher level of self-publishing, self-producing, self-releasing?
Yeah, if I was a stock shareholder of Amazon, I would have been devastated when they started to broaden into selling everything from kitchen sinks and stuff. But I'll tell you my Amazon story. And you've heard me talk about when I got the Apple TV, all of a sudden my purchased media consumption went up to literally hundreds a month. I would, you know, it's so convenient to buy television shows and movies. Well, as Tim can appreciate, I was for a couple months using the Palm Pre. And by golly, they have a deal with Amazon. If you can imagine a song, you can search for it and purchase it and have it on the phone and play it in your stereo immediately. So within a period of about a month, I think I purchased maybe 150 songs, and I could move them over to other media. You know, lately with my book, I went on to pull down the Kindle version via my iPod and or my iPad, and you know, guess what? There's a Kindle app. So Amazon, I think, is out crafting Mac by making itself, you know, as nimble through acquisitions and also just partnering a little bit better and allowing its content to be sort of moved across different platforms with more agility than Mac permits. So I think this is great for consumers that we have Amazon and Apple, you know, really at you know, head-to-head on the digital content front. You add Google, and it means that the innovation is going to skyrocket.
And let's not forget Netflix, of course. Netflix, according to a Business Week story, now has a deal with a production company behind Sylvester Stallone's action film, The Expendables. And that deal is going to add 5 to 10 new movies per year to the internet streaming service. This is New Image Millennium Films, and basically Netflix will be able to start streaming that company's releases at the same time that the premium movie channels such as HBO and Stars start running them. So obviously this is, you know, Netflix just continues to make deals for more streaming content. But guys, I gotta say, I still don't think there's really anything that great to stream. I know we all love Netflix and we talk about it each week. It's a great service. The streaming is amazing. I was trying to find a movie on Saturday night, and I just went through, you know, 3 or 4 crappy films, 5 minutes of it before, you know, settled on one that, you know, my husband and I have both seen, and then we started going back watching, you know, episodes of 30 Rock from season 2, you know, because that's always good, right? Like, you can always watch Liz Lemon and Jack Donaghy again, but there weren't any movies that just screamed out at you. And that could be a reflection of the movie business. I don't know. I'm not convinced that the options are all that broad.
Well, you know, the problem is that the all-you-can-eat price is too cheap. right? I love the all-you-can-eat because I can get, you know, as many videos for my kids as I want. But you're right. The good stuff's not in the streaming. You've got to get a DVD delivered or pay for it on another platform. But look, Netflix is marketing itself. It's on the app. It's on the new Apple. It's, you know, it's through TiVo. You know, it's got its own Roku players, its own players. So, I mean, they're becoming, you know, fairly a significant force. They just have to redo their price model and get better content.
Tim, what do you think? Is it a matter of pricing? I mean, should there be different tiers for streaming, like the low quality crappy movie tier, and then you pay $5 a month and we'll actually give you some good films you want to see?
You know, it's hard to say. I think the other shoe that's going to drop is going to be unlimited bandwidth is going to go away. And so for as great a value as Netflix is, I mean, I watch old movies, I watch documentaries, you know, I watch foreign films, I watch The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo on Netflix. I've watched great documentaries like Food Inc. and King Korn, and there's just some great stuff on there that I would never discover otherwise. So I'm pleased as punch with it. And yeah, there are some disappointing moments where I can't get Mad Men without getting a DVD. But we're going to have to start paying for bandwidth at some point in time. It's going to happen. Every conference that I go to, that seems to be a conversation both in the mobile video space and in the desktop video space. It's like, okay, you know, the days of unlimited bandwidth on AT&T devices are over. When's that going to go to the desktop? And when are we going to start getting hit with, you know, I remember one time I had an AT&T Wi-Fi card and, or, you know, the mobile card, and I did a TWIM from a conference and got a bill for like $400.
You did?
Yeah, it was crazy. And I had to call them up and negotiate. And, you know, they gave me a price break on it, but it was crazy. And I think
and
we're going to...
Were we worth it?
Yes, absolutely.
For our seven listeners. Yes. You seven listeners, you're worth it. So we love you.
I think moving forward, we're going to start getting hit with these charges, and it's going to affect things like Netflix.
Lon, what do you think?
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, let's go to Lon first, and then we'll go back to you, Kevin. Lon, what are your thoughts on the content availability on Netflix, but also on some of the things that Tim is saying?
Well, I agree with Tim because I have found stuff I probably wouldn't have watched if it wasn't for the fact that it was on the streaming service. But at the same token, you know, we don't have Blockbusters here, at least where I am in Connecticut anymore. But when we did, there was the middle of the store where all that stuff was that you never looked at. And I get that same feeling that's what the Netflix streaming site is. But the one thing I do like about Netflix is that it is giving people the motivation to connect internet devices to their televisions. And that's a good thing for us. So the more the merrier, and I'm happy to see this announcement and see some more development, but the more boxes that can play internet stuff on televisions, and hopefully you know, we won't see too much of these bandwidth constraints, but that I think that's going to be an issue too down the road.
All right, so this VLC media player, this is essentially kind of like sort of like an open source project, Tim. Is that fair to say? I'm reading this article on Geek.com about how it's been ported to the iPad. It's awaiting approval from Apple. You know that I think that this is something that is going to be of somewhat of significance to independent producers. What role does this VLC open source video platform play, Tim?
Well, for me, VLC has always been very helpful when you're hacking videos. When you need to get videos that you don't have permission to view on your Mac, it's always been helpful in getting those videos viewable and porting things like DVDs onto your iPod. I've also noticed, well, the key thing in this article is it's awaiting Apple's approval, which I you know, if I was a betting man, I would be betting that this thing is not going to get approved, and that we're gonna see some more press about that. But I could be wrong, but that would be my bet. Also, the thing that I've noticed about VLC is that when I've downloaded it to an Apple computer, I will get a question mark as the icon after a couple days. So like it'll download, and then I'll have the icon appear in my dock on the desktop. And then after a couple restarts, all of a sudden that icon, that VLC icon, which I think is like a little traffic cone, turns into an invisible question mark. And how that happens, I don't know. But just based on that, I don't think it has a chance in hell at getting improved in the Apple Store.
Another interesting story came from Broadcast Engineering, and I think this will be interesting for everybody. Web to TV video revenue to see explosive growth. Who doesn't like hearing that? Number of U.S. households with broadband service that watch full-length online video on the TV will reach 57 million by 2014, according to a new report from the researcher Instat, and that the sale of web to TV video content will grow from 2 billion to more than 17 billion by 2014. A lot of the factors that are cited as impacting this revenue growth is that the installed base of web-enabled consumer electronics video devices is going to grow from 70 million in 2009 to 237 million in 2014. Not bad. Number of U.S. broadband homes that own web-enabled consumer electronic devices will nearly triple to 98 million by 2014, and so on. Lon, I'm going to start with you on this because you had touched on this a few minutes ago when you were saying, obviously, as an independent producer, that, you know, sort of anything that increases the number of devices and hooks into the TV is a good thing. Do these numbers, as far as you can tell, do these numbers seem plausible, and how do you take advantage of this expectation of growth?
Well, it'll be plausible when the checks start showing up. That's
all that matters.
It's all that matters to me is show me the money. But I think there's no question that this will happen. What the questions I see out there in the future are that it's going to become increasingly difficult for major advertisers to really find the best hooks into this kind of stuff. And I think it's going to certainly be more money out there, but it'll be distributed on a much broader basis. You know, we used to have just network, and then we had cable, and now we've got network, cable, and probably 7,500 web shows that have a viewership that has some eyeballs worth getting out to. So this will be a very intriguing period of time. I think if you look at the regular print media is kind of going through this now, where this transition away from the big newspaper that tells you everything to more niche kind of journalistic endeavors that are now segmenting that industry considerably. I think the same thing's going to happen on the video side, and this clearly is the direction things are going in.
Kevin, what do you think? I mean, what do you think about these numbers and about the propensity of consumers to be watching online video on the TV set? You know, what is it? Is this just truly going to be a matter of time before we're all using, you know, Apple TV-like devices? Or does there need to be some sort of event that propels mass usage?
Well, here, for starters, I predicted wrongly the advent of a web-to-TV collide for about the past 4 or 5 years. So what's surprising me about these numbers is that, you know, like, why aren't we there already? Because the technology's been there. I think that the best explanation I can come up with, because, you know, to me, it's like watching a bunch of cavemen hit, you know, rocks together while we're all holding Bic lighters, you know? It's such a glorious experience to sort of have the best of lean forward and lean back and be able to browse content, you know, and look at your favorite, you know, YouTubers or other content right from the television set. I think two things. One is I think we can see, we'll probably see this fall, a mass media, you know, $99 device that is non-restrictive. So Apple TV's a good step toward that, but, you know, you've got to go through, you know, Apple. I'm seeing web-based players, and the trick is going to be really simple interface that's, you know, almost remote control-like, not keyboard-like. And I think that we're going to soon not have the word online video. I mean, it's going to be video content, and there'll be different levels of it, professional and prosumer. But I think this space where television and web meet is going to be owned by what we're calling the new establishment. These are sort of the next new network, Revision 3s, et cetera. And the reason for that is because, you know, they're not encumbered with the bigger deals that large studios have, but they've got more muscle power than individual creators.
You know what we're going to be calling it? We're not going to be calling it online video. We're going to be calling it Beyond Viral.
There we go.
That's what it's going to be. Tim, what do you see as the factors that need to occur for this kind of for these numbers to come to fruition?
Well, I mean, like I was talking about earlier, the other shoe to drop is the cost of bandwidth. And with all this over the top, who's delivering it to the household? Is it the cable operator? Is it the phone company? Is it something new that we haven't seen yet? And who's going to pay for that bandwidth? Is it going to be the consumer that's going to pay, or is it going to be YouTube that's going to pay for the bandwidth? I mean, YouTube has subsidized online video for the past 5 years, and it's amazing how far we've come in such a short amount of time, because we haven't had to pay for the true cost of delivering that content. And now it looks like YouTube's very close to becoming profitable. Will they continue into this space with Google TV and subsidize the delivery? You know, the recent thing that happened with Verizon trying to position stuff with Congress, YouTube doing that could be a play towards the future with this and delivering to the household. And how is it going to be delivered? Is it going to come in on a cable? Is it going to come in over a cellular network?
So, Tim, if I'm understanding correctly, your new concern, your new rallying cry is who's going to pay for the bandwidth?
That seems
I'm getting you a T-shirt.
Okay. That
yeah.
seems to be on my mind.
It does.
We haven't seen it yet, but it seems to be coming.
So I'm scared like hell of that, but because I quite
no just don't say it. Don't say Verizon. Don't say Verizon. I'm
no,
gonna lose you
here,
again.
Yeah, but here's my thought around this: is that's okay. Consumers will pay. They'll pay by either suffering through 30-second pre-rolls and ads, and advertisers would be all too keen to subsidize that. Or for some people that would prefer a seamless experience, they'll pay the dollar and watch a show uninterrupted. So I think as long as there are people that want to watch, as long as there's creation content that is desired, that an economic model will unfold, and it's just going to take a little time for it to be fair.
Lon, before we move on to our final story, which occurs north of the border, what do you think about the bandwidth costs that Tim is talking about and is concerned about? Is that an inevitability?
I believe it's inevitable that people will try to extract as much profit from their pipes as they can. And it does bring back this argument of just really underlying how important it is that net neutrality continue to be something that advocates for content fight for, because that ultimately is part of the deal. They can certainly impose bandwidth caps. Bandwidth caps are in place now. Comcast has, I think, a 250 gigabyte cap. AT&T is now an abysmally low 2 gigabytes on these portable devices. But we need to really push this issue forward, and I think for people listening to keep the conversation going with their members of Congress, if you're in the United States, and in other countries, your elected officials, to let them know that all content needs to be created or treated equally on the web. And that's the first step, because if they can carve out different types of content delivery, this is where those things start to happen, and it makes it tough for independent folks to get themselves into the mix.
I like that. All content must be treated equally. For our final story, we're going to touch on we're going to have a little bit of an international flavor. Our contributor, one of our producers is Jason Perrier, who is in Canada, does a wonderful job keeping us apprised of what's going on, and sent some interesting stories from Reuters looking at the Venice Film Festival, but also at the competition that is coming from the Toronto Film Festival. And what I think is interesting, I'm not necessarily going to go into the details on these stories per se, but I thought it'd be interesting to just kind of look at the role that Canada is now playing in the movie business. I mean, Tim, you're in Hollywood most of the time. I want to start this with you. Just kind of, what role has Canada come to play? It's really kind of become, a launching pad for so many movies these days. I mean, the film festival is, but just also so many things are shot there. What is its role now?
Well, the company that I now work for is out of Toronto.
True. Oh my gosh, you're right.
I was this summer. I was up there and had breakfast with Jason, and you know, that town is really a little Hollywood in terms of its, you know, a lot of TV shows, a lot of movies are shot there. It doubles as New York, and the Toronto Film Festival is a big deal there. There's another producer up there that also does a series about things that take place in Toronto, and he's very focused on the red carpet of the Toronto Film Festival, and it seems to be getting more glamorous every year. In terms of it competing with the Venice Film Festival, I'm not part of that independent film world anymore. I used to go to Sundance every year and participate and really pay attention to who was moving and shaking things. But since I got into web video, I've kind of stepped away from it. But yet, Toronto and Vancouver, those two cities do play an important role in the content that's created for mainstream America.
You know what makes me so excited, Daisy, about this?
What, Kevin?
Like Jerry Lewis is to France, Knowles is to Canada. I'm like,
okay, I'm like, explain.
For inexplicable reasons. I'm always keynoting stuff and asking. I never make any money from Canada, but I'm always being asked to speak at these Canadian events. And I think it's because I'm a Southerner, and you know, Southerners bond with like Canadians in the UK. Yeah, for whatever reason, my name must be written on a bathroom wall.
This is don't pay Kevin. Because you know what it says in Canada, we don't pay Kevin because he doesn't pay enough money to Verizon.
Right.
See, that's what's going on. Final take on Toronto Film Festival, Lon. I'll throw this one to you. Is that there's a partnership with Foursquare. Interesting that Foursquare is becoming ubiquitous in some ways as location-based services. But the National Post is adding a new platform to its repertoire for covering the festival, and that is Foursquare. I guess what I think is interesting with this is just how extensive Foursquare is starting to become.
They are. They're become, and they have to at this stage of their development. They have Facebook coming after them. They've got Gowalla and a number of other location-based competitors that are all trying to get the same level of users that they've been able to attain. And clearly, Facebook has some advantages there. But they're surviving, and I think they're finding the niches. And one of the best things about Foursquare for me is that push notification thing that it does on my iPhone. So I have all my friends on Foursquare. It's mostly people that I know personally, and it's kind of neat just to be out somewhere and have the phone tell me, hey, so-and-so is nearby. It's kind of a cool thing, and Foursquare is great for event-based kinds of get-togethers, and that's a great use of it.
Now, if I found out if my phone was telling me who was nearby, it could be really helpful because then I could say, great, I can go run and hide so I don't have to have a conversation. Not that I would ever, ever do that or try to avoid anyone at all. Speaking of location-based services, as many of our listeners know, I also do conference programming for iMedia and ad tech, and I'm deeply involved with Programming Ad Tech New York, which is November 2nd through 4th in New York, and we have an entire day-long track on location-based services. So if you are eager to learn more about this, we've got terrific speakers from Foursquare, Gowalla, Whirl, pretty much everyone, as well as brands who are very active in the location-based area. It's just one of the hottest areas of digital marketing. So if you're interested in that, definitely check out Ad Tech New York. We're near the end of the show, so I just want to remind our listeners, please become our friend on the TWIM Facebook page at facebook.com/pages/thisweekinmedia. Tim Street, where can people find you online?
You can check out my blog, onetimstreet.com, and if you're interested in pre-rolls, multi-mid-rolls, and geo-targeted interactive overlays, check out mdialog.com.
Lon, where do you want people to find you?
They can find me on Twitter, LONSEIDMAN. And a quick plug, Daisy, I'm going to be going to NASA's launch of Discovery, a real geeked-out affair for me. I'm really excited about that. So I'll be part of their tweet-up that they're putting together. There's like 150 of us, but we're all in the press area. It's going to be a really cool event, so we're going to try to do some live coverage, some live tweeting, and hopefully some live
video. And
when
is that, Lon? What day is that?
Well, right now it's slated to go up on November 1st. Okay. Although with the space program being a very complicated endeavor, they tell us it could change. And
yes.
So I'm just going to stay down in Florida for as long as possible. So, but November 1st is when we're shooting for, and I'll blog if things change.
And you'll be reporting on that for us, I hope, because that'll be exciting. We'd love to hear about that. Kevin, where do you want people to find you online, and where should they find Beyond Viral?
Well, you know, I was going to plug Will Video for Food, the blog, or Beyond Viral, which beyondviral.com, which is launching pretty soon. But I'm going to go ahead and stick with just Google the word fart, and you'll find me at the top. Google the word fart, you'll see a video. It's called Farting in Public. That's me. That's easy to remember.
That's all you need to know to get to Kevin. And just to recap, we are going to do a giveaway. We are giving away free copies. They're probably not going to be signed, but that's okay.
I'll sign them.
Okay, well, that makes it more complicated for you. I'm buying them. I'm supporting your book. We're giving away copies of Beyond Viral over the next week. You need to tweet me, Daisy Whitney, and you need to put Beyond Viral as the hashtag. Just kind of, you know, how you want to use it, and we'll help Kevin have a strong debut week for his book. So,
do we get extra attention if it's creative? Like, you use it as a coaster to smack your kid? Is that in play?
Smack your kid? Don't say that. Smack maybe your spouse's butt.
You're right. It's a hardback. We'll stick with softbacks for that.
Exactly. But coasters. Hey, you know, paperbacks, hardbacks can work well as coasters. If you're looking for me, of course, Daisy Whitney, you can find me at daisywhitney.com and Daisy Whitney on Twitter. This mess you've been listening to was recorded on September 14th, 2010. We are over and out.
This Week in Media is a PixelCore.tv production produced by Suzanne Llewellyn with technical producers John Riley and Alutha Jamankar. Content contributor is Jason Perrier.